Craft Beer Radio pre-show.
Hey, everybody. Sorry about the bad sound on the pre-show last time.
Again, it's the computer recorder screwed up. We had to go to the backup, and we didn't realize that the backup had some clipping, buzzing problems. We did just a little pre-check test just before now. We made some small adjustments, and while we don't monitor the backup recording, because 90% of the time it goes unused, yeah. It should at least sound better this time, so if it is needed in the future, we should be cool.
Good stuff. Wow. It's been an interesting week. I had a really great interview. It looked like everything was going roses, and then it turned out that the people were not actually authorized to hire somebody at that point in time. So.
Oh, sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't usually get, you know, that excited after an interview, but I was like, I did pretty well there.
And they're like, well, we really liked you. We're just not allowed to hire anyone right now.
So that sucks. But the rest of the week, I was really just captivated by this Malaysian airline story.
It's insane. I mean, last week you were like, oh, they'll find them. There's oil slick, you know? Yeah. And
the reason why, it's so insane because this kind of stuff doesn't happen. This is very Clancy-like at this point.
Yeah, Clancy. Yeah, I mean, it's a great mystery, and everyone loves a mystery. It's So I told you in an IM, and this is the skeptic in me. Everything I know about search and rescue, I learned in the movies.
Right.
Just like how we had a conversation about shooting guns a while back, and everything you knew about shooting guns, you had learned about on TV.
Yes.
And so you think, you know, in the movies, in TV, right, you got some guy in a darkened control room scheduling up a satellite to fly by in 20 minutes, and in 22 minutes they'll know definitively where it's at.
Right.
Or they'll be able to basically image the entire radius, you know, where the plane could possibly be within a couple days, right? That's what you think can happen. And my question is, what is reality? The world is a really fucking big place.
Yes.
The Pacific and Indian Oceans are really
huge
places. And, you know, what is our real search capability of that, right? And, like, how much of what you think is possible from the movies is actually true?
I think if you can pinpoint a specific location, then probably a lot of that is true, where you can get really good, you can get a satellite over there and get really high quality images of a specific location. If you're doing a massive search, you know, that specific location, you're talking about taking a satellite and having it resolve things that are like a meter or even less, even smaller in length if they're really good. But then you extrapolate out and say, okay, how many meters are you actually talking about covering? And it's an unbelievably huge number.
There's 632 runways long enough for 777 to land on.
From what I've read, you wouldn't even really need a runway. You just need a place, a road would be fine if it's long enough. It's just flat. That's what you need.
Right.
So it doesn't, I mean, a runway.
There's not too many interstate highways in Southeast Asia, though.
No, but there's, at the upper edge of where they think it could have been, there's certainly flat desert land.
Yeah, yeah. It almost could get to North Korea. Like, you know, like one of my thoughts is, where could this thing go, you know?
Yeah.
It could certainly land in North Korea and no one would be able to. I mean, if it lands anywhere else, it's going to leak out.
Yeah.
I mean, with text messages and all that stuff, the information is going to get out. But if it lands in North Korea,
well, the text messages,
I should say smartphones and whatnot, but in that part of the world, it's SMS based, right? Most of their,
well, no, I think that they kill the passengers.
I'm talking about, hey, there's a plane on the runway over there.
Oh,
that kind of, you know, people, because people all over the world have phones and they text, right? And
yeah,
the information would get out. Where wouldn't it get out? It wouldn't get out from North Korea.
I mean, northern China, yeah.
Sure, but you know, you think, you know, if you're, especially if you're playing Tom Clancy, you know where it's at. It's in North Korea, or it's, you know, a few other places, you know.
Afghanistan's covered with military radars, and I mean, it's not like planes have active radars to tell them when they can avoid, you know, if they're being pinged by other radars. It looks like they flew up this 45,000 feet, which is above the surface ceiling of the aircraft, probably dropped the pressure in the cabin, and then asphyxiated all the passengers. That's why they weren't calling for help or anything.
Right.
And then it was flying for 8 hours.
8 hours?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, the last I heard, it sounds like you have some new data that I didn't see. I even looked at it, followed up this morning, right? It was still pretty much what we had talked about yesterday, right? 5 hours, telemetric pings to the satellites from the engines. So what's new? What takes it out to 8 hours, and what's the evidence of going up to 45,000 feet? Because I haven't seen either of those ones yet.
That had to do with radar data from when they were trying to ascertain as it went back over the Malaysian Peninsula.
Okay,
but that radar data may be sort of sketchy. It's iffy as to whether that's actually.
I did see that they saw a couple pings on military radar, like on the western side of the Malaysian Peninsula, heading out over the Indian Ocean or something like that.
Right. And then there were some thoughts, you know, well, how could it go undetected? Well, apparently some of the Indian radar isn't always on. But how would they know that?
Right.
How would the people who are doing this, unless it was a very intricately planned event, know that? I mean, I posted something to my Twitter feed, it was a couple of days ago when... You know, I thought here's a plausible but very Clancy-like very tiny plausible. But is the idea that maybe somebody wants this plane as a platform for delivery of a weapon of mass destruction? Because let's say you have an improvised nuclear device; those are going to be damn heavy,
right?
But if you have something then why wouldn't you just steal? Plain old 727, you can get those anywhere. Why 777? Why this particular plane? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, it wasn't a long-haul flight, didn't have a ton of fuel, but it had a reasonable amount of fuel. It was supposed to be an 8-hour flight or something like that.
Like 6 hours.
I mean, they could have stolen a plane that had a 16-hour flight ahead of it, you know? I mean... There's a lot of those from around Kuala Lumpur, you know, it's a pretty international city. I'm sure there's ones from there headed, you know, all the way to Europe and things like that. But yeah, it's a great mystery.
It's kind of weird because in the whole Snowden era, we assume that these kind of things are just easily tracked.
Well, in our lifetime... Things don't go missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's like, you know, we're watching... There's a couple things recently where I've been kind of...
That is so good.
Yeah, we're drinking the beer from last week, the Siren Noir from Heavy Seas. It's their barrel-aged Imperial Stout, and yummy. So, watching Walking Dead, right? And, you know, people get separated, and they're still in the same county, right?
Mm-hmm.
But with the... zombies out there, you really can't search easily. There's no telecommunications, right? I mean, it's plausible that you'll never see your wife again.
Right.
You know, and you're still in the same county, you know, that's hard to fathom in today's world, right? And then watching a Disney movie, Frozen, right? It's one of the, you know, hear a lot of people, it's so cliche, I don't even want to say it out loud, but, you know, in every Disney movie, the parents die in the first, you know, 20 minutes or something like that. Well, you know, in Frozen, the parents are out
not
on the ship.
Not in Aladdin, right? Her father was still alive.
Yeah, yeah.
but Aladdin's parents are dead, so.
There you go. But the parents are out on a ship, you know, and they kind of show the ship capsizing, right, behind a giant wave. But it's one of those things, like, you know, you think...
Well, mermaid her father was... Sorry.
Her father's a god at that point, yeah. so he's okay. I don't know about Prince Eric's parents. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I've watched Little Mermaid. But anyway, you know, just think back to those colonial times, right? Ship sinks. Don't know. You never know exactly what happened. I mean, at that point, you know, because of the kind of information you're used to receiving in your life, maybe lost at sea is a good enough closure, right? But today, lost at sea isn't a good enough closure, you know? Today, you want to know what exactly happened to your loved one who was on the airplane or something like that. You just can't say, oh, I was lost at sea.
Because today you think you should be able to know that because we're used to the idea that.
Yeah. How many things just go in our lifetime? I mean, Jimmy Hoffa was before our lifetime, but there's not too many mysteries of things that just disappear.
Or at least not too many that we hear about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's tons of low-profile missing persons and things like that.
But a gigantic plane that's, you know, 200 yards from wingtip to wingtip, full-body 777, that's hard for it to go missing.
It's probably 200 feet. I don't think it's 200 yards.
Okay, 200 feet, yeah. But still, it's a lot. It's big. Mm-hmm. It's a big thing. But you know, I've been transfixed by it, and it's a... Wow, it's a crazy, crazy story, and I just want to keep hearing about it. It's almost cliche, I guess, that I care a lot about the Ukraine thing, but that's just in the back of my mind now because this plane mystery.
Well, that's it. You're so hungry for you still feel like this has to be revealed. It has to be figured out. Any day now, any hour now. Mm-hmm. So I find myself going to the news like, "What's new? What's new? What's new? What's new?" And I mean, with our current technology, you still think they have to figure this out soon, real soon.
Yeah,
like maybe before the show's over, they might figure it out. But I keep going back to the websites, and there's nothing new.
Or there's the conspiracy. There's something they're not telling us.
Yeah, I don't see how that could. I mean,
well, it's certainly possible that there are things that they're not telling us, but and probable. I mean, we don't find out these things until it's gone through a couple layers of resistance. But still, it's hard for a whole bunch of governments to cover up something. A whole bunch of governments with different motivations to cover up something big. So
it's so unlikely to happen, right? Even if it was aliens, trying to keep everyone quiet, it'd be so unlikely. So Heather showed me a news story right before we came down here that cops might have nearly averted a mass shooting in the Pittsburgh St. Patrick's Day parade today.
Yeah, I saw that.
I mean, the guy has looks like he was planning to shoot the thing up, but he got in a domestic argument with his roommate and girlfriend last night and got arrested, so he couldn't do it today.
It just goes to show you that most people who will do something like that are fucking idiots.
Yeah. You're so close to your plan coming to fruition, and you get in a fight with your roommate's girlfriend, shoot a couple rounds through the ceiling with your AK-47, and...
He had an AK?
He had an AK with a couple... 30-round clips full, 357. His laptop had some incriminating evidence of him talking about going to Market Square and trying to kill at least a dozen women or something like that.
Wow.
At least that's the story that she showed me on her phone. So, that's up there with, the Connecticut shooting, right? The
Adam Lanza, that kid?
Yeah, I mean, it's up there with those kinds of things. I mean, this... So close, and this could have been, Pittsburgh would have been spotlight for the next mass shooting,
Let's not talk about that. speaking about the sea and aliens, I was listening to an interesting podcast, from actually Cracked as a podcast, and it's funny, but they also get into some interesting subjects. Mm-hmm. One of them was about aliens and theories about aliens, and of course. We don't see one of the reasons why aliens we've talked about this before. One of the reasons why alien conspiracy theories aren't around anymore is because everyone has a cell phone now. And so the idea of, there was aliens who landed in my backyard and we hung out, but, I just didn't have a photo. I didn't have a camera at the time. No, everyone has a camera. Everyone's taking pictures of things they see strange and they're instantly debunked. So the whole idea of aliens, but, this kind of reasons why why we shouldn't even really expect there to be. I mean, let's say that there was some alien life form that was visiting us in some sense. They could be completely out of our range of perception, right? I mean, in the same way that we can create,
or they could be so skillful,
yeah,
right. I mean, that's it. I mean, if there's really, yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's unlikely they would try to be sneaky but be bad at it,
mm-hmm.
right? They have the technology to travel,
yeah,
from solar system to solar system across the galaxy, and they don't want to be discovered. Yet they're really bad at staying hidden. That's pretty unlikely, right?
They brought up the whole thing with a chicken. They tested chickens and to see whether they would mate with like a male chicken would mate with something, and they found that they could mate with a stick if they put like the right feather situation mm-hmm. on top. And you know, obviously we consider ourselves much more intelligent than chicken, but if they can do the things that we're saying, they would be much more intelligent than us. And they could probably set up a situation where, to us, it looks completely normal. I mean, you know, the movies say that these things are, oh, we'd be able to detect it because the aliens wouldn't have emotions. But they'd be able to cover for that. You figure?
Wait a second. Someone actually makes the argument that aliens wouldn't have emotions? Or are you saying in the movies?
In the movies. Oh, okay. In the movies, right. They say, you know, you'd be able to find out because the aliens don't actually have emotions. Or they mess up, you know, like, I like this human drink, you know. And it's like, we take for granted the whole idea that we can't be fooled. We can be very easily fooled. But there's other things like, why wouldn't they just explore with really tiny micro things that were, you know, engineered for that purpose that mm-hmm. we wouldn't even know were around.
Right.
And the whole idea that they would even bother to come to a little planet like ours is really silly. Like, a lot of the movies talk about they're here for our water. Like, Oblivion was about that. The aliens are here for our
Spoiler
water.
Alert!
The aliens are here for a while. That happens in the first 5 minutes of the movie. I'm not spoiling anything. It turns out there's a, you know, if you look in, we found there's a blob of water like the size of a solar system. It's out in space.
Right.
I mean, water's plentiful. Water's everywhere. The things that would be on Earth.
Ice is plentiful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And for someone sufficiently advanced, there's not much of a hurdle of heating that ice up.
Yes.
Right? But, I mean, if for some reason they're curious about liquid water or, you know, I mean, again, speculating why aliens would come and
why would they come to a tiny little rock? I mean, when there's a lot more interesting things and you know, if you need valuable minerals, well, there's a lot more valuable minerals you can get out in asteroids and just easily take them mm-hmm. than you can by going to Earth and stealing all our gold or whatever.
Well, go to Mercury. Steal Mercury's.
Yeah.
Heavy metals, right? I mean, yeah.
So, it was really interesting. I thought it was great. I think you should listen to it. I think you'd find it really enjoyable.
Sounds good.
But the thing they brought up, the guy at the end brought up one thing. He said, I don't really believe this, but I used to, when he was into the sort of alien thing. He said, I thought there was a plausible thing, which was, and it actually has an explanation for why they're not showing up anymore. And that's that the aliens aren't from space. The aliens are from under the ocean. We've only explored 3%, you know, 9% of the ocean floor or whatever. You know, it's completely unexplored. And in the same way, in order for us to go down there, we have to get into these James Cameron mm-hmm. subs and stuff like that. And what we see is we see them going into their James Cameron subs, coming up and exploring us. And why are they mm-hmm. checking us out? Well, because we had this big, massive, you know, a couple world wars and all this stuff was falling down on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, what the hell's going on there? So they decided to check up. And then, and so they were like, they're probably going, what the fuck is going on with these idiots? And then we got better at shipping and having things lost. We're like, all right, well, we don't have to worry about them anymore. And so they just stopped coming up.
It's a fun theory.
It's a fun, exactly. It's really fun. It's of course silly, but it's fun. But yeah, I think that I do think that the real final frontier is under the ocean. There's so much there that we don't know.
I mean, there's lots that we don't know. I don't think there's going to be. I'm trying to figure the right adjective to say. I was going to say game-changing or world-changing. I mean, there's things that will change the world. There'll be medical discoveries. There'll be biodiversity discoveries. There'll be things like that, right? I don't think there's going to be discoveries of, wow, there's little green men are from Atlantis.
But you know? I think we may find new access to resources that, you know, that we didn't...
There's that. Yeah. I mean, you're going to find isolated pockets of... divergent evolution, things like
really
that, right?
Interesting life.
You're going to see stuff that occurs just in this, you know, the stuff that Cameron saw at the bottom of the Marianas Trench. We don't know if it was rare or prevalent on the ocean floors in the deep caverns,
mm-hmm.
It would be deep canyons of the ocean. He might have seen things that are in every deep canyon. He might have seen stuff that is very specific to the Marianas Trench, right? I mean, that's really interesting stuff, right? And especially if you could... I mean, so cataloging creatures...
Well, you have the likelihood of convergent evolution. It's like there's an American flying squirrel, right? It's a squirrel that has skin on his flap so it can fly. Mm-hmm. But completely unrelated in Australia, there's an Australian flying thing that's a marsupial. It's completely mm-hmm. unrelated, right. But they, you know, they evolved under the same pressure. So you would expect to see, even if they're not completely related, things that were evolving under the same pressure, under the same under the same natural pressures. So they would go in similar directions.
Right. Yeah. Physical traits. Right. Yeah. But, you know, talking about, you know, how things evolve, right, can be very fascinating, seeing how things under those kinds of different environments that are so, you know, different from what we see, you know, and so unexplored, right? I mean, yeah, I mean, you could go, like, even what James Cameron did, you could go 2 miles down the trench and might see a different world, right? You don't. It is so unexplored.
It reminds me of this. This is what a flower looks like to us.
Mm-hmm.
This is what a flower looks like in UV only. This is what a bee, it's simulated, a bee actually sees. And this is what a bird actually sees. So flowers reflect in different mm-hmm. colors.
Yeah, I've seen things similar to that before. But, you know, basically the insect in the birds, it kind of is more of a bullseye or target, right? Because, like, more or less what we see is just a one color flower. They see something that is guiding them towards the center.
And this was the other interesting, it kind of relates, so it's another interesting graph. And this graph is the reason why we see the colors that we see in the electromagnetic spectrum. And it's because we evolved in water, and there was still water in our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the absorption of water of the electromagnetic spectrum. And you mm-hmm. see, this is the visible area.
Okay.
So it gets, this is the part of the electromagnetic spectrum that gets through water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we see that light.
Fascinating. I know there's a similar story with UV and stuff about ducks.
Mm-hmm.
Like mallard coloring has a lot of UV component, and ducks can see more into the UV or something like that.
Yeah, into the near UV. There's still some, yeah.
Yeah, so ducks can pick that up more, so they see more of the ultraviolet, and there's a lot of ultraviolet coloring in a mallard.
Yeah, it's fascinating mm-hmm. stuff, especially when you realize that color itself is kind of a trick of the brain. Right, I mean, it's a wavelength of light, right? But does color actually exist? It's kind of something your brain builds up by comparison to other things.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about color.
Yeah,
but yeah, what does color represent? Right, and I don't want to get too much into, hey, man, does your green look like my green, or do we make up different colors?
I do want to get into some philosophy things, so I don't...
We've talked about that before, though. Yeah. I didn't want to get into it because we've talked about that.
Part of it, yeah, the whole, you know, is your green the same as my green? But the idea that color and things like, you know, we talk about how when we're drinking beers, talk about flavor.
Yeah.
Is a combination of taste and smell.
I mean, yeah, it's information.
Yeah.
And your senses needed to interpret that information.
Right.
So they cobbled together color, right?
Yeah.
And it was ingrained enough in genetics that everyone, most people, most women and a lot of men see the same color, you know, or at least can differentiate the same colors.
Yeah. And a lot of that is, you know, is taught, you know, the way we're taught. And that's why you have those things where some cultures didn't see colors.
They didn't see blue, yeah.
Right. And that's because they just didn't. They saw what we saw, but they didn't see what we saw.
Well, I mean, it's exactly, we had exactly talked about this before. Yeah. You know, this was one of the coolest points I think I've ever had on a pre or post show. And that is, if there's not a pressure for you to differentiate a piece of information, a color, a flavor, then it blends into other nearby colors and flavors. You don't see it. Mm-hmm. And that radio lab where we were talking about color, where the ancient peoples, including the Greek, didn't have a color for blue. And they called the sky gray or, you know, different things like that, but they never called the sky blue. And then one of the researchers that was doing a research project, you know, on the color thing, did a little bit of experiment with his child, right? He never told his child the sky was blue, mm-hmm. right? You know, because, like, I've told my kids the sky is blue, yeah. So they learned that that's blue.
I remember the story, but it's cool.
He never told his kid the sky was blue. So as his kid was developing, he would ask him periodically, what color is the sky? Or what color is that? And at first, the kid was like, what are you talking about? There's nothing there. Right? It's just the sky. It's just there. There's nothing there. There's nothing that has color. And if there's no pressure to discern something, it's just going to blend in with other nearby, with the background, with other nearby things. And that has such a great relationship to beer tasting.
Yeah.
All these, you know, or any kind of artisanal food and beverage tasting, you know, you get the background smear of flavor, but you really have to work at, you know, you have to add pressure to discern the details. And for us, the pressure is wanting to talk about it, to give it something for people to listen to. For the listener, their pressure is wanting to learn, I guess, you know, those kinds of things. And I think it ties in like 100% discerning colors and, you know, and flavors and any, just differentiating fine information.
Absolutely. It's
speech would be the same way, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because if language is much less complex, grunts and groans and things can convey generally what you're trying to say. But then when you, like, I'm having a great time with Allison right now. Like, we're reading some, she has a book. I should have brought it down. I wanted to bring it down to show it to you. It's the My Little Pony Elements of Harmony. It's kind of the guidebook for the first three seasons of the show type thing. It's not written for kindergartner, first grader. You know, it's written for
bronies.
Bronies could certainly read it. I would say it's probably more so written for tweens or something like that.
Okay.
But bronies too. But, you know, there's a lot of words. So, like, I was reading through these words. I'm like, I stopped and asked Ellie, do you know what this means? She's like, no. I'm like, so it took a little bit. I'm like, anytime you hear a word you don't know what it means, stop and ask me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and she finally got the hang of it. So, but it's a fun exercise for me too, right? Redefining words in a language that she can understand, not just the words that she can understand, but the scenarios, the situations, her, you know, her bank of experience. And
I can remember,
like today, Max and I were doing some superhero stickers, and one of the superheroes was called, what was the word? I don't know if it was the name of the superhero or was describing him. What was the word? It was,
well, I have a similar story.
I'll think about it, but go ahead.
I remember when I was a kid, I loved Knight Rider. because why wouldn't I? It's a robot car. And in the beginning, in the beginning of the show, you know, they have the narration where he says, "Enter a shadowy world of a man who does not exist," because he was erased from but I didn't know what exist meant, and so I asked my parents what exist meant, and they said to be alive. And I've put that together into kind of a man who does not to be alive. I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah, well,
and see, they were not able to. I mean, I had,
but did they know you meant about the, you didn't give them the context, right? Because I mean, with the context, it's a man who the government has disowned, disclaimed, you know, has erased his records, right? So, but yeah, I mean, you know, you almost asked a bad question, right? Because they gave you an answer that is kind of right for the question
for
that you
some,
asked.
For some, yeah. I mean,
but you were applying it to a context which didn't make any sense.
I didn't explain it in the context. Yeah. So it absolutely, I mean, it that you were doing with your daughter in that context helped a lot, because then you could explain what that meant. But I remember that very vividly. For whatever reason, that sticks out. I did want to get into something a little bit in the same philosophy realm, but a little bit more complicated, if you wouldn't mind. Talked about quantum theory and stuff like that. I'm not going to go into the math or anything specific about quantum theory, but there is some of the effects of quantum theory give you pause if you think about them. This is the, you know, Schrodinger had this problem. But really, there's the question of does the moon exist if you're not looking at it? Which sounds silly. And in all honesty, from a perspective of knowing about quantum mechanics, it is silly, because yes, the moon is very much entangled with us. It's the information has already gotten to us. We're entangled with it. But outside of our universal horizon, does that stuff exist? Is that, you can't say that this cup, for example, if you take a fully quantum mechanical world, this cup doesn't actually have the properties that we give it. This cup doesn't have fixed external properties. It does when we feel it, when we have it around us, when it's on this table, when it's interacting with its environment. But if you were to say there was a cup that was outside of our universal horizon, we would not be able to necessarily say it existed. You could have two quasars on either side of the universe that we can see, but they can't necessarily say that the other one exists. And it's iffy as to whether they do exist for the quasar, because of what we've been able to learn about the physics of it, is because essentially they aren't entangled with each other, so they don't have the information between each other. And as long as with that information not being there, it all becomes a maze of things that we really don't understand yet.
Interesting. I don't know what I'm going to add to that. You know, I'm thinking along the lines of, we had talked before about, you know, we can see in a 14 billion-ish light year circle around us, or 28 light year diameter.
It turns out to be because of the expansion of the universe, it's 93 million light years, 93 million light years in diameter. So that's about 40.
Oh, is that what we can actually see?
So it's, well, I mean, because the stuff has expanded further out. So, you know, if you take just the radius, that you half of 93, so 47 roughly, right? So about 47 light years.
Okay. And then, you know, we had talked before about, you know, how much of the universe is that?
Billion light years, not billion. Billion.
Right. Now, the question is, how much of the universe is that, right? And the best information we were able to find, or that I could find, was, 2 to 3%, maybe. Something like that.
Yeah.
you know. So there's a lot of unseen, and tying it into your recent, you know, what you were just saying is unentangled, mm-hmm. non-existent, potentially, universe.
Yes. The question is, does it truly not exist if it's outside of our, if it's entangled with our, not entangled with our, does it exist, but it's in a superposition of possible states that when we finally are entangled with it in some way, when light interacts with it in some way.
Okay, so here's the question you asked your parents. What does it mean to exist? Mm-hmm. What's exist, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we cannot observe it, however, because of laws of science, laws of nature, we can define its characteristics, right? Assuming it's uniform, right? With what we can see.
Well, that's
see,
the
right?
thing is yeah. we actually can't define its characteristics. These characteristics fundamentally are meaningless to us. To say they don't exist is going a little bit too far, but to say they're meaningless to us is actually a better way of putting it. The idea of something outside of our spatial horizon existing is kind of a meaningless notion.
Well, is it meaningless? Because now I'm almost taking a counter argument to things I've said in the past, right? I've said things in the past. I can't remember exactly which context I said it in, but it's like, if you can't observe it, it doesn't matter. Oh, no, what I was talking about. I was talking about God. That's what I was talking about, right?
Okay.
You know, if you can't observe it, it doesn't matter, right?
Right.
And what you're saying is the matter that, you know, that's beyond the horizon, right? It doesn't matter, right? The matter doesn't matter.
the matter is in a state that we can't, that we necessarily can't have information about. Not that it doesn't matter,
but we can't have
any information about it. And therefore, we can't say anything about it.
So I guess we can say if it's uniform with space,
then it's
that
likely a lot like ours.
Yeah, but if it's but we can't actually say it is uniform.
Yeah, we can say that based on the cosmic microwave background, you know, it probably should be uniform. And then you can question whether that means that there is an entanglement because we have the cosmic microwave background. So there's a mm-hmm. lot of, you know,
yeah.
this goes back to the Bell inequalities and lots of really interesting things that arise from trying to understand the radically strange ideas that manifest themselves in quantum.
But the
theory.
Cosmic microwave background radiation isn't the whole universe either. It's just the stuff.
It's right after recombination, right?
Right. It's just the stuff that was visible when the universe became transparent, right?
Yes.
So there's, again, that might just be the 2-3%, the number that I threw out before, right? I mean,
yeah.
Everything beyond that's never been observed.
That's right. That would be...
That's where God is.
That would be what scientists consider multiverse level one, which is everything outside of our observable universe. And that is pretty much... No scientist disagrees with that, as far as I know. No scientist disagrees with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably stuff outside of our observable universe. It's the other levels of multiverse that get into... probably not. Or at least we have no evidence to say...
All right, right. Going from stuff that's outside your observable universe through multiple universes up through God and heaven, it's all the same stuff, right?
Right.
I mean, unless, you know, I mean, people listening are going to believe that God does interact with us, you know, that there's evidence.
Yeah. I mean,
of that.
I would say those people would be right. There is evidence of God interacting with people. I would say there's no good evidence. But there's evidence that's written down in books, right? That people have interacted with God. You know, that counts as a type of evidence. It's just not very good evidence. And it's certainly not corroborative evidence. It's not something that we can check.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not very good evidence. But if you were to, you just boil down evidence to it, right. to its absolute, what
okay.
does it mean?
Right, right. So I was underloading the term,
yeah.
right? I was kind of saying everyone who's listening is going, when they say evidence, is going to think scientifically testable evidence.
Right.
But no, I guess you could take a much more lenient interpretation of evidence.
Give a much more liberal idea of evidence. And yeah, there is evidence that God exists. There's no good evidence as far as evidence. There's evidence for intelligent design. There's no good evidence for intelligent design. There's no evidence that doesn't fail at some point. There's no evidence that doesn't that jives with what we see around us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's loosely defining evidence, sure, but you may get into problems if you're talking to somebody and they say, well, I have evidence, you know, I talk to God, that's my evidence. And you say, you know, well, that's not evidence. And they'll say, yes, it is, and blah, blah, blah. And you say, well, it's not good evidence. And then you have an upper hand if you want to get into that situation. Because if you can't confirm it, then what does it mean?
Oh, I remember the word Allie wanted to know, abominable. She wanted to know what abominable.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it wasn't... It wasn't about snowman, the snowman or anything. It was, we're doing some superhero stuff or something like that, right? So I had to try to describe for her, like, how do you describe someone who is bad to their essence, you know, that kind of thing, right? And it was one of the hardest ones she had asked about, right? And I'm thinking, like, you know how people don't like Beast and Beauty and the Beast just because he is who he is, and he's bad because he is who he is. That's abominable.
Yeah,
she got it. So,
but Beast is a good guy, so he's not bad. But people just perceive him as being bad.
No. He was bad for there. He took on his role of being an ugly, mean beast. He imprisoned Belle,
but then he turned out to be a prince with a heart of gold.
Well, yes, but he didn't. He was the selfish one in the story.
Mm. No. We'll get on the beer and then we can talk about other stuff.
Okay, sounds good. Oh, before I forget, I sent you a tweet. I think it was a tweet, maybe an IM a couple weeks ago. There's a new show on A&E, AMC, A&E, I think. Those Who Kill. It's this serial killer drama thing set in Pittsburgh. I mean, really, set in Pittsburgh. Actually, they set it in Pittsburgh better than anything. I mean, like... They say they're on Mayview Drive, and they're really at Mayview, the old psychiatric institute. You know. They're never driving the wrong way down one way streets. You know, all that kind of stuff that is common for those kinds of movies. However, you asked me the question about Jack Reacher. Did I like Jack Reacher because it was a good movie or because it was set in Pittsburgh? I think after watching Those Who Kill, I can say I like Jack Reacher because it was a decent movie. Those Who Kill, which really outdoes themselves in properly setting the show in Pittsburgh, isn't a very good show.
I did want to bring this up because it's actually Damien sent me a text last night about the story of Job, and he said God sounds like an abusive father, an abusive alcoholic father. I read him. I sent him this quote from Richard Dawkins, which I think is great. This is the quote. He says, "The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction. Jealous and proud of it. A petty, unjust, unforgiving control freak. A vindictive, bloodthirsty ethnic cleanser. Misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, capriciously malevolent bully." That's a lot to say. Uh-huh. So I tweeted what I thought was that essence, which was the God of the Old Testament is a lot like Joffrey from Game of Thrones. Spooky speak like that. He retweeted that.
That's funny.
So, yeah. And right. We're just talking about the Old Testament God at this point. Just the character in the story, which is fascinating stuff. Especially when you learn the history, like the God that it turned that the old te- that that the Jews now worship Yahweh is not the original God in the stories. The original God is El. That's why when Joshua fought with him and he, you know, wrestled with him in the story and was anointed by God, he was then turned Yisrael. And you have Samuel and Ishmael. You know, these are all names based on that. Mm-hmm. The God, that name of the God was El. It was part of a pantheon of other gods. And Yahweh was just the war god. And when the small tribe was focused on war, mm-hmm. they turned to that war god, and then that turned into it's a whole thing about how that turned into the one god. Yeah, crazy, huh?
How they make the jump from having many from
the
polygods to
the theory goes like this:
polytheism. The one
it was, you know, entirely polytheism, and you know, there's lots of this mm-hmm. you can find in the Bible, like, you know, Just the Ten Commandments, you shall have no other gods before me. Well, why would that say that if there weren't other gods? You know, and this, there's a lot of plurals and stuff in the very beginning, but then it was edited later to make it all one.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess you know, if you're, again, you know, you're, okay, so we picked this god. He's our god, you know. Why would we spend much time writing about the other ones that were?
Yeah, I mean, in that time, gods were associated with areas, with geographic mm-hmm. areas. So you had different gods for different geographic areas. And eventually, you know, a cult of Yahweh, the Yahwists, got in control and they took the other gods out of the pantheon. They made it legal mm-hmm. to worship the other gods. And yeah, I mean, if you don't look at it that way, then the stories themselves become pretty nonsensical. Like, for example, the Israelites who...
All right.
The Israelites who were communicating regularly with the one true God, that they knew was the one true God, Moses goes away for a little while, and they start worshiping a golden calf. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Oops.
Yeah. Unless you look at it as a revisionist, you know, a attempt to rewrite these stories with this one God figure thrown down.
And make everything else either vanish or seem silly, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I think that the Bible is a fascinating book, particularly the Old Testament. I think the New Testament has... it has issues. I'm not as impressed with it in terms of the kind of variety of stories and stuff like that, because the Old Testament is full of all types of great stories. It's absurd to the highest degree, but it's great stories. And then the New Testament is really just sort of one kind of offshoot of one story, this Messiah character. Mm-hmm. In the Old Testament, which is just, you know, which was not even the whole point of the Old Testament itself. It's just one small area of the Old Testament.
Right. Fun stuff.
It's sort of like how the Book of Mormon is, you know, is okay, let's take this one kind of offshoot of the New Testament and turn it into something ridiculous.
Yes. Let's drink some beer.
All right.